Well, I mean, the West, it depends how you define interference. And I mean, the West has been actively involved in trying to mediate a solution to this crisis, and not only this Ukrainian crisis, but all the Ukrainian crises, since that includes the United States. It's primarily, though, Europe, and for this case, particularly Poland and so on. And they're neighbors. They want to prevent a civil war or other or related problems on their east. And so they've been heavily involved. The agreement didn't stick. That was the problem. They reached an agreement, but it didn't appear to take hold. And at some point, the security forces deserted the president, at least in the capital, and so he fled. We've of course seen this before, going with the Russian Revolution, for example. And so that's where we are now. There's been Russian involvement. There's been Western involvement. But not excessive, I would argue. I think that they can still reach an agreement which preserves Ukrainian sovereignty, in which the international community can play a constructive role in supporting Ukraine's recovery. But it'll be difficult. This is a challenging situation. You've got a divided population. You have a lot of economic problems. So we shouldn't underestimate the challenges ahead.
Well, doesn't it seem kind of odd, Mr. Nezamaraya, that you have NATO, you have EU, you have the U.S. Immediately coming into Ukraine's affairs, telling them, for example, that we are going to support you as you go through this democratic process, all within a span of what, a past week, as we see developments there unfold. And I'd like to point out the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, of which there are certain restraints that are cited in this non-legal binding document. For example, one of them is the fact that the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine needs to be kept, and therefore there should not be any intervention if there was a conflict to break out.
All right, I want to point out, number one, that like the other gentleman said, that the Western powers have been actively involved in what's going on in Ukraine. I think that the agreement that was brokered by the EU, namely by Poland, Germany, and France, with the presence of Russia, but this was an EU brokered agreement, was made just to give legal cover to the coup. The strategy was this: you had members of the opposition talking with the Ukrainian government, while another faction was pushing for violence in the streets and continued to work to oust the government. This is the same thing that's actually been going on in Venezuela as well. While these protests in Ukraine have taken place and these riots, in Venezuela, the exact same thing is taking place with the support of the United States. You have one faction of the opposition pushing for regime change in the streets, and then you have one faction that's negotiating, and that's what's happened in Europe. I mean, you had Victoria Nuland from the State Department. You had the EU Commissioner for Foreign Security Affairs, Catherine Ashton. You had John Regime Change McCain. You had various people from the European Union all going there supporting the opposition forces, the protesters, and the people who are behind the regime change there. John McCain asked for the government to be ousted in Kiev. And these same people, if we had people from Ukraine coming to their countries and capitals asking for the people to overthrow their governments, they wouldn't accept this. We have double standards here with it. This coup took place because Ukraine refused to sign an agreement with the European Union that would essentially change it into an Eastern European colony.
Richard White's parallels drawn there to what's happening in Venezuela. We could also, perhaps in a way, also compare to what's going on in Syria when we have the idea of regime change and the U.S. being involved here. Of course, in this case in point, we also have the EU involved in what's going on in Ukraine. Do you see parallels like that? And this comes as accusations of the U.S. arming rebels have surfaced. It's not 100% accurate based on some outlets, but it says that U.S. agents were giving $20 million a week for arms and other help to the opposition and rebels there in Kiev.
As far as I've seen, the U.S. provides some assistance for democracy movements in all three countries you mentioned. Primarily, it's to build political parties, support media outreach, and so on. There is some level, when different sources come up with different numbers and different means, of U.S. Military support to the various opposition groups in Syria. That seems to be evident. I'm not aware of any military support offered to the opposition in Ukraine. There's been some political support, particularly some of the institutions here in the United States and in Europe. And the embassy, you could tell from the intercepted phone call, the U.S. diplomats were trying to help the opposition.
Let's go back to this Budapest Memorandum of 1994, and I'd like to find out from you, Mr. Nizam-e-Raya. In it, it says that there should not be any type of sway coming from the countries involved, Russia, the United States, and the United Kingdom, regarding any type of economic assistance to be given to Ukraine. Do you think that this memorandum, is something that either countries are going to abide by, or can we at this point say that it's out the door?
I mean, any rational person with logical reasoning and elementary understanding knows that this agreement isn't worth the paper it's written on in regards to it being respected. The European and the United States like to sign a lot of things, as do other countries in the world. They don't respect any of these agreements. I mean, you've had opposition videos being professionally produced with propaganda saying that we're fighting for democracy. This was not a protest movement that started because of democracy. It was a protest, albeit the Ukrainian government's corrupt. It was a protest movement that started simply because the Ukrainian government refused to sign an agreement with the European Union, an economic association agreement with the EU. And the EU does not respect non-intervention. Why would it send all its officials to promote protests in the streets there? If that happened in Brussels or in Berlin or Paris or in Washington, which is not part of the EU, all of these governments would be outraged that this is happening. They've supported a coup, and they've given it legal cover. They've worked to justify and legitimize this coup, and they've just called it a democratic revolution, when it's not a democratic revolution. It doesn't represent all Ukrainians. It's overthrown the legitimate government of the country that was democratically elected. It's also wants to outlaw. This shows how democratic these opposition groups are. They want to outlaw the Party of Regions, which represents almost 40% of the seats in parliament. That's the biggest party. All the opposition parties put together only have one extra seat compared to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've acted unconstitutionally. They've changed the Ukrainian Rada or parliament into a rubber stamp organization. And the EU and the United States have given their blessing to this. And they've used Poland. Poland has been used like Turkey has been used against Syria. There should be no mistake about it, that just like Syria has been used as a bridge to attack Iran in the future or to instigate something against Iran, the EU and the United States are using Ukraine to target Moscow.
I'm sorry, Moscow, again,
the Russians. So the road to Moscow goes through Kiev.
It was a pleasure to have you make statements there. Thank you very much. Author and geopolitical analyst Mahdi Daryush Nizam-e-Raya talking to us from Ottawa, and thank you, Richard White, Senior Fellow and Director at the Hudson Institute, and thanks for watching another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitale and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.